Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we catch up with renowned writer and author John Steinbreeder. We'll talk Masters and so much more. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad to be along. This hour, we want to talk what else? Masters, it's upon us. It's coming up in just a couple of weeks, and we have to go to one of our go-to guys who has been covering the Masters so many years. He's got way deep double digits, more than a couple of decades in there and such. But this guy is living the life. Because when you say, oh, you know, you're going to retire, what are you going to do? Well, you want to play golf and you want to travel. And this guy already does it, and he gets paid to do it. It's insane to me how this happened for John Steinbreeder. He is award-winning writer, award-winning author. He has written about the New York football Giants. He is not just a golf guy. He has written about a lot of things over a lot of times. As a matter of fact, deep double-digit books, I think 24, 25. I'll let Stein tell the story. Thanks for making time, my man. I know you're busy. You're traveling all over the place. It's always good to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks, Keith. It's great to be with you. It's exciting that the Masters is on its way, and feeling a little spring weather up here in the Northeast, and getting fired up about the golf that lies ahead, especially when the azaleas bloom and we've got golf in Augusta again.
It's nice, you know, and Rory with the green jacket finally, and so that's proverbial monkeys off of his back, so to speak. But now it's going to be what's next. You know, can you win another one? Can you do back-to-back? You know, you're going to put the jacket on somebody. Can you be like Tiger and put it on yourself?
Well, who knows what he's going to do? I mean, he's got the menu figured out. So obviously he's passed the first test of being the defending champion. And we'll see. We'll see how he goes. It's kind of hard. It's pretty wide open this year, isn't it? You know, and you don't have that quest with Rory that you had last year and the last couple of years of whether he's going to finally win it or not. So it's, you know, Scotty hasn't been playing that well. That's going to be a big topic of conversation. DeChambeau's just won two in a row on LIV. So we'll see how he does without wearing shorts and playing a full 4-day schedule there over the tournament, see if he can hold up under that stress. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. But the big storyline of Rory the past few years we don't have, and not that that's a bad thing. It's great that he got it, and it's great to be focused on something else. And I'm not predicting his defending in any way, shape, or form. I think it's almost impossible to do, and I think he's still, you know, so relieved from that and on such a high from that. I just don't know how well prepared he's going to be and how well he's going to play down there in Augusta.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. There may be a Tiger sighting. You know, we don't know at this point what's going on. We're not even going to hedge one way or another. The guy loves the tournament. The guy's pretty good at it. And I happen to be at the one that he won most recently, which is crazy the way that happened. But the huge stories. And you know, you're a storyteller. You write stories about Herb Kohler and different people and a lot about courses and designers and things like that. But when you find something that's worth writing about, you know, you take yourself to the next level, and not all writers. I mean, obviously, golf writers are becoming, you know, like dinosaurs. You know, from that standpoint, as there are not too many around anymore. But you know, you still are able through Global Golf Post and Jim Nugent to be able to bring a story to life.
Well, you kind of say. I mean, it's what we like to do and what we enjoy doing the most, and. That's what makes and has always made the Masters so much fun because there's so many storylines that are appearing off of that. And, you know, it makes what I do so interesting because there's no shortage in this game, which has got a small community about it, but there's no shortage of stories. And as you know, I tell a lot of stories off tour, off, you know, off the course, whether it's course design, whether it's travel, whether it's individuals, whether it's history, that, you know, so I've got a lot of different subjects to cover, a lot of opportunities to write about those different subjects. It keeps it very interesting.
Well, I do have to say, just when you think that the Masters couldn't be covered any more than it is, now Prime Video is involved, and Amen Corner, the famed three holes, is going to be a focus of a lot of coverage, extra coverage and time. So the Masters, certainly as a tournament, has certainly been able to figure out how to elevate their coverage as well.
I just got something in my email the other day, and it was kind of laying out the different ways you can see the Masters, and my eyes glazed over at around paragraph number 3. I guess I'm just too old to be dealing with all these variables. Half of them I don't know how to get to and understand in the first place, but it is amazing, and it's very typical of the Masters, and they've wanted to do this forever, and I knew this from those 15 years I wrote for Masters.com, is that, you know, there's such an imperative of how do we bring this tournament to as many people as possible, and how do we make that experience as good as it can possibly be for someone who is not there? And I give Augusta all the credit in the world. They've been doing this forever. They've been looking at ways to do this, and maybe they were a little slow under Clifford Roberts to get in the front nine, the first nine, as they call it on TV, and expanding it the way they have. But it's fantastic, that effort they make to make it possible for as many people around the world and as many ages and demographic groups and everything else to see and be a part of this tournament from afar.
There is no question. It is an international event. And with their partners, the broadcast partners, and the limited commercial time and the limited sponsors and such, it makes viewing pretty pleasant. Now, not all the announcers are top-notch, but, you know, when you got a lot of coverage like that, you try to make the best of what you're seeing. But if you can't be on the grounds, which we know is first and foremost so great when you have that opportunity to do it, and I suggest anybody to get into the lottery and do that. You and I have been very fortunate over the years to be able to be on the grounds during the tournament, and it's just unlike any other. There's no question. I know that's a slogan and a saying, but that is about as true as a statement as you can say.
Well, it's, you know, it's the greatest. I think it's the best sports event in the world from a management standpoint, the way they run it and the way they put it on. And I see that not only through my own eyes and having covered Super Bowls and Final Fours and French Opens and different golf tournaments and you know, World Series and things like that. There's no event that's better run or better operated from a media person standpoint or from a spectator standpoint. And I've seen that at the Masters with friends of mine who've gone there and seeing them experiencing it, and they're blown away by it, and they've never seen anything like it, and it's just universal time and time again. I've never seen anybody who's seen that tournament for the first time in their lives not say to me afterwards it was the greatest experience they've ever had in their sports viewing life, and how much they enjoyed it, and how different it was, and how much Augusta National and the Masters sets themselves apart from the rest of the sporting world by everything they do to take care of the patrons, to parking's for free. The merchandise center is crowded as it can be, moves quickly, unbelievable concessions at great prices, no cell phones, which I adore more than almost anything else down there aside from the golf. All those things, there's no place like it and no place that cares as much about the patron and the person watching it, whether at home or on site, as Augusta does. People can say they do at other sports events, but I still don't believe there's any place like the Masters, because they not only talk the talk, they walk the walk when it comes to taking care of the people who watch it.
It is so, so special. And you sound like yours truly. I've said this on the show before many times, and the people hear from you is great, because I, too, have covered Super Bowls and World Series and all these other big, big events. And as far as orchestration, as far as the logistics go, none better. It is. I mean, it is something that even the PGA Tour, I think, needs to take better note of, right? Because if you compare that tournament, and I say this lovingly, not that you would do this because there's no comparison, but to something like the Waste Management, the Phoenix Open, right? And what that thing has become, right? It's just opposite ends of the spectrum.
The Wasted Management, I keep thinking of that great old name when everybody was getting so hammered out there all the time. And not to denigrate, I love the Thunderbirds and all that they do out there for charity and everything else. But yeah, it's just a different, it's a different animal. And I just have the greatest. I've had my wife, who's not a golfer, but likes sports, likes the game as a spectator, and she's been to two Masters with me, and she's just absolutely blown away those two times with how the whole experience went and the behavior of the people leaving the chairs around the greens and tees, the good manners, the courtesy of everybody involved with it, and just the beautiful setting. And you couldn't have a better way, a better place to watch a sports event.
Yeah, I mean, there is Southern charm there, obviously. You're talking about Georgia, and there are a lot of Southerners that come there with their hospitality angle. But it's an internationally attended event as well. So when you come there, you better learn the playbook pretty quickly, or you won't be invited back, or you might be shown out the fence through the gate and never be seen again or heard from Augusta National standpoint.
Well, they don't put up with any nonsense, and that's great. And I think there's just it's a good thing in this day and age to be able to you have to behave, you have to abide by certain rules, and those rules make it they make it better for everybody. I mean, it's unbelievable. Again, about the nobody's yelling you to man, and nobody's heckling, nobody's cheering against people. I mean, none of that stuff happens down there. It's a real throwback, and it's great for that reason.
Yeah, it is, and you know, this is one of the things that I don't think that even Bobby Jones or Clifford Roberts envisioned of the level that it has gotten to. This is an unbelievable event, just from a standpoint across the board.
Yeah, it's the biggest. It's obviously the biggest one in golf, and it's one of the biggest ones in sports, and it totally sets itself above all, if not most, others. I don't know one that's as good in any sport or as comparable in terms of the overall experience. Super Bowl's bigger, I get that, but there's nothing from an experience. Both in person and watching from home or wherever, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, but the Super Bowl may be bigger from the standpoint, but it's those weeks leading up to the Super Bowl where all the action happens. So you can only put so many people into a stadium, and if you're really, really high up, and the cost, I mean, that's the thing as well that sets Augusta National and the Masters apart from everybody else. I mean, the tickets for the Super Bowl, they may say $350 on the ticket, but you put some zeros at the end and it gets insane. And I tell people all the time, you want to watch a sporting event like that, just watch it at home in your television room on your big screen TV. That's the best way to do that. But we're with John Steinbreeder, renowned writer, author, and all-around good guy, regular contributor to this show, because he can and he wants to, and you know, some people just want to come back, so this is what you do. You make time for them, and we're certainly doing that for Stein this hour. We got a lot more to talk about golf-wise than the Masters, but we'll be back for our next segment after this break with John Steinbreeder.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I haven't been this excited since I discovered I couldn't lick my elbow.
We are back with John Steinbreeder. Stein is joining us for the hour. We appreciate that very much. And for those that are wondering about John Daly's appearances, we know the Hooters, John, has been turned, you know, up into rubble in Augusta. So where's John Daly going to do? He needs to have a place. Well, he's going to be at Topgolf. So he's going to be there Thursday and Friday, Masters Week. So that will be insane at Topgolf. Topgolf is not insane enough.
Well, you don't have the, of course, the tank-topped waitresses in at Topgolf, so that'll be a little disappointing for some of the fans. But you know, good for John Daly. You know, I never went to Hooters down in Augusta. Other things to do, other places I wanted to go when my work was done. But I have a lot of friends of mine who would make an appearance there to see John Daly, and they love seeing him there. And he's still got his legions of fans, and I guess that was quite an event. And Top Golf seems a little bit more upscale venue for him. So I hope he has a great time, and I hope the people that love John Daly enjoy themselves. And you know, it's another part of the Masters experience for a lot of people, and I get a kick out of it. So it's always made me laugh, and you know, it's fantastic. So good for him and good for them.
Yeah, I get a little chuckle myself, so thanks for that. But that's JD is a man of the people, always has been, always will be. Says he really enjoys hanging out with the fans. So, and I know they enjoy hanging out with him because it's an experience.
I just want to know where I could see Bad Bunny in Augusta. Now that we've got John Daly, and you know, Bad Bunny is, you know, he rocked the Super Bowl. That's the other thing we need down there. Better would be James Brown, but that's a story for another time.
Yeah.
I digress.
Yeah, there you go. That is definitely, we'll say James Brown, because he's an Augusta native, and we miss him dearly. And man, just unbelievable. I'm glad you brought James Brown up, because I'll put the other one out of my mind as soon as I can, from that standpoint. And I watched Eddie Murphy. So I found a video of Eddie Murphy impersonating JB right in front of him. Right. So it was insane. And Eddie's such a talent. You know, this guy is something else. But he did such a great job that James Brown broke down. It was just, he was just so blown away by that happening. So we do miss.
I'd be a little scared to do that in front of James Brown, because he's a tough dude. But I tell you, his band, they were tight, and they could play. And I still love listening to his music. But I mean, they didn't miss a note. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm a huge Maceo Parker guy, being a saxophonist, and Maceo is still around, and I have a music friend who actually is friends with Maceo, so we're working on trying to get Maceo on the show just because we can. But yeah, that was unbelievable, because you would get stared down, you would be in trouble. I mean, James Brown was a taskmaster from everything I've been told.
No, I just the best. So what a band he had, and what music that guy had, and it's always good. I always think of him when I get down to Augusta, and I listen to his music. It was always part of my master's prep. You know, some people play the you know, the shell tournament in Houston or whatever. I listen to James Brown. That's how I get ready for the Masters and the old days.
Sounds good. Popcorn. So yeah, that works. some of the younger listeners are saying, what's going on now? I don't know. Popcorn. But yeah, the good old days for us. I remember having Jesse Ortiz on the show. From Orlemar, for those who don't know who Jesse is, you should. Master Club designer, and the guy that put Orlemar on the map, and his tri-metal, unbelievable. But he used to always say, "Keith, I'm just a dinosaur." You know, this is years ago, and Jesse finally retired, and he's like, "I'm just a dinosaur." I'm like, "Well, let me tell you, Stein. I guess that's us now. I don't know, but we still get to be around this."
I'm up to my hips in tar pits right now, you know. So what are you going to do? But
as I mentioned in the open for you, right? I mean, you're not going to retire until somebody, you know, sends you your notice, because you're already doing what you do in retirement. You're playing golf, you're traveling, and you happen to be writing and getting paid for it. So that's, you know, that's the trifecta if you can get it. What a brilliant thing.
Well, I have a lot of fun. I've been doing some fun stories and some good traveling and getting in a little golf, seeing some different places. And, that's one thing for me. The Masters also signifies a time to sort of take to the road a little bit more often with my clubs and to start to play around here a little bit. And it's a great time of year.
Yeah, he's in that northeast stuff. So, yeah, anytime it gets warmer in Connecticut or points north, Stein will be found on the links. As we're with John Steinbrenner, award-winning writer and author. We'll be back after this break.
Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter. Lama. Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga Gunga Galunga.
We're back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with John Steinbrenner. Always great to catch up with the buddy. We met so many years ago at Chelsea Piers, and I tell this story because I actually remember it. I do suffer from CRS, but not all the time. Some things stick in your memory, and the opening at Chelsea Piers was one of those, because I'm sitting next to this guy. I have no idea who John Steinbrenner is at that point. I'm young in the game, so to speak, a couple years doing the show, and sure enough, and then Stein, for some reason, took me in like a lost puppy, and we've been kind of pet and owner ever since. So I appreciate that.
No, you're nice to say.
Well, you know, it is interesting, this great game of ours, that so many people play it or try to play it or play it very well, and to be able to do the show for as long as I have, but also to have great guests like yourself, and then have those great guests want to come back on and be around the industry and such. And you know, this nice thing they do in Orlando called the PGA Merchandise Show. You know, I got to see you and Jeff Rude. I mean, under one roof is crazy. There were so many people I wanted to see that week, and you're trying to work your calendar, and when can I see Stein? And whenever, and it just so happened that KFPR, Kevin Frisch, did his due diligence, and everybody of importance was under that roof the one night. So that was great to see so many people that I wanted to see anyway, and in a more relaxed state, which is great because you don't have to try to fit somebody in with between appointments at the PGA Merchandise Show and driving around the floor, and you know how it gets. Yeah, you know, it's insane for people. Yeah. It's millions of square feet of golf stuff.
No, it's a great show, and I love it for that, but it's a lot of walking. And that's one thing about Augusta, you know, to get back to when we were talking about the Masters, is that, too, is such a great place to meet and greet and to be with people. And especially in this day and age, we're all working so remotely. There are not many of those during the year when you get to see everybody kind of in the same area. The Players is one of those. Obviously, the four majors, and the PGA Show, but for me, the Masters and the PGA Show were the two great meeting times of the year, and really got the year going in a great way.
Yeah, the only thing you have to do with the Masters is you have to make sure you get people on your calendar before you get in the gates, because there's no cell phones and you got no way to reach them. So I had Jim McClain on the show recently, and he has a new book out, and it's about his time playing as an All-American at the University of Houston, which is an interesting read. For sure. I don't know what took him so long to put it out. He still didn't tell me exactly why he waited so long. But he's also working on his X Factor update and stuff. So he's a busy man. But we have talked about, you know, meeting by the greens, by the putting green. And we got to get that figured out and stuff. And Casey Kerr, a longtime PGA Tour caddy and looped many times at Augusta. Another guy we look forward to seeing. So, you know, you get that chance to see some people. And then every once in a while you run into somebody who you didn't think was going to be there, and you're surprised.
Well, that's what makes it fun. And that's, you know, the golf world is so small. I can't tell you how many times when I'm on the road, doing, you know, a travel feature of my course design stuff that I run into somebody I know in the airports. I mean, it happens constantly in airports like Glasgow or Edinburgh or Dublin, places that are real golf centric. And you see there's, 100 golf travel bags coming out of the carousel there at the in baggage claim of the different flights coming in. But that's fun, and that's one of the things that makes this game so much fun, is being able to do that and to run into those folks. And that's always just, what I like about it so much. I mean, I'm going to be 70 in June, which I can't believe, but the idea that I continue in this game at my age, continue to make new friends and continue to have a way to reconnect with old friends. I don't know where else, what other business I'd be in, where I would be able to do that as much as I do. And I hear this from people all over. I remember talking to Herb Kohler about this a lot when he said, he realized late in his life that the greatest friendships he developed in his life were those that he developed through the game of golf. And I think all of us in this industry feel that way.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it's interesting that you say that, because you're a man of importance. You get out there and you're writing stuff. As a matter of fact, I had heard that you won't even be able to be in Augusta because you're going to be in Greece, doing things like that. So you're around, even making new friends. I know they had to pull you back in the UK a little bit because you're seen in one too many pubs. Over time, I think. So they're like, wait, is he really working, or is he working? So.
Only so many visits will allow me there. But yeah, Greece will be fun. I'm heading there on Master Sunday, and which is also Greek Easter, and going to spend some time at a new resort there called Costa Navarino, which is on the coast, southwest, I believe it's southwest of Athens. So I'm really looking forward to that. I can spend some time in Athens, but four courses there, two designed by Ole Thabel, one by Bernard Langer, another by Robert, Trent Jones II, and it sounds like a great place, and it should be a lot of fun.
Have you been to Greece before?
I have. I've been there, I guess, four or five times probably over the years, and never played golf or never had a golf club in my hand in that country, but I've toured plenty of ruins, and I've emptied a couple of ouzo bottles in a taverna before, so I've enjoyed it. I love Greece. I love the Greek people, and I love, even though all my lineage is sort of German and British Isles, I'm very much a Mediterranean at heart, and there's just something about being on the Mediterranean and enjoying that country, that weather, that great food and drink, and that great hospitality of the people there. I just love that part of the world.
And you won't be going in the summertime, so that's brilliant for you. Good job on that, because it is insane with all the people. I guess but the Europeans, go on holiday, is the term they use, the holiday, and they go for quite a long time, so they're all over the place. But the summertime in Greece is not nicest weather either, unless you like a lot of heat and a lot of sun. But I digress.
I did that one set of the times I went there, and it was when I was 21 years old, and I could tolerate the heat, and I loved seeing all the nice lithe women from the Scandinavia who were down visiting the beaches. But I have no interest in ever going back there any time between June and August.
Well, what says there, our world traveler, who knows, John Steinbreeder. Nice work on that. It's interesting, after all this time. So let's talk a little bit more about Greece. Is this resort a new thing for the country?
I think it is. I think it's a pretty new resort, and they've got four different hotels, so it's quite the setup. And, I believe it is. I don't know how deep and into the game of golf that they're getting, but they've really got this thing organized now. They've got an international golf academy there. It's four or five star hotels. It's got four courses. It's got all sorts of amenities to it that you would expect at a resort like that. And I think it's a nice effort on their part. I mean, it's a great country. You would think it's got the sea, it's got the weather, it would be perfect for golf. And they've got that great European market, which, they've got Spain and Portugal, with so many of the English and so many of the Northern Europeans go to. And this just adding one more to it.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. What is your favorite destination that you've been to in Europe specifically?
Favorite in Europe specifically? Gosh, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, I love Lynx Golf so much. So if you're going to talk about a destination, I mean, you know, St. Andrews in Scotland to me is my favorite of all time. If you're going to talk about sort of a more traditional golf kind of destination, I mean, I it's not Europe, but it's close to it, is Morocco. I think, you know, and I've talked with you about Morocco. I've been to Morocco 20 times. I run a tournament over there. There's something about Morocco that it's a six-hour flight from JFK. It's got golf in a variety of different locales, whether it's in the arid area of Marrakesh with the Atlas Mountains looming in the background, or up in the Atlas Mountains in the village of Ifrane. It's got a terrific Jack Nicklaus course up there, or in a cork forest outside the just on the edge of the capital city of Rabat, which you've got 54 and soon to be 45 and soon to be 54 holes of really, really good golf there. So I really, you know, as a resort, as a destination, I think Morocco to me exceeds them all. I love Portugal and I love Spain. I love the countries. I love the climate, the history, the culture, the food. I love everything about it. I just don't think the golf, it's getting there, but I just don't think the golf is great in either one of those two countries. I also spent some time in Sicily and Verdura, which is Ciracco Forte's got that resort is his there, and that's got two Kyle Phillip courses, and Sicily is an amazing place. And that resort with that golf and that locale, and you know, in the afternoons I'd play golf, and my wife and I would drive up and go see the Agrigento ruins, and you'd go up to the town of Corleone, really a town named Corleone, and just be in that town that Mario Puzo, you know, used as the name of the Corleone family, where they came from, where the godfather came from. I thought Verdura was incredible, and I really enjoyed being in Sicily in that island, and those people, and just the sense of hospitality there, the sense of beauty, and the golf was a great combination.
So golf in Italy, you think that I visited the booth a couple of years ago at the PGA Merchandise Show and was amazed by the number of courses that were in Italy. And it's one of my favorite countries. I've been to numerous places around the country and have yet to see a golf course. So I was curious. Like, I was like, where's the golf? Where are the courses? Because I've been around and I don't see them.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I know, you know, I lived in Lugano, Switzerland, right on the Italian border in the north of Italy and south of Switzerland. And, you know, there's three or four golf courses around there, incredibly scenic, beautiful places. But, you know, as a golf thing, it's kind of like a B-minus. You know, it's nothing that there's so many other things I'd rather be doing in that part of the world. And I think that's part of the problem with Spain and with Portugal to me, too. As well as, you know, the golf is okay. It's a B maybe, but gosh, I mean, all the interesting cities, the beautiful beaches, the great countryside, the wonderful cuisine. I don't know. I'd rather, you know, there are other places. If I'm going to play golf and travel all that distance with my clubs, I'd rather go up and be in the British Isles. Again, the difference to me is, you know, what I find in Morocco with that great combination of really good golf, lots of golf, and really great cultural things to do. And I was remiss in not pointing out that I spent some time once on a trip in Belgium and Holland and playing a bunch of Harry S. Colt courses up there, and spent a little time in Brussels, a little time in Amsterdam, and then in between playing some really good Lynx style golf courses that Colt designed, and that was an extraordinary experience and really, really fun. And I became a big Harry Colt fan playing Sunningdale and other courses in the UK, and that experience to be able to go across the channel there and play some of Colt's courses over there was really great fun.
All right, so you brought up a good topic for conversation. I wasn't planning on it, but since you are a travel writer, you travel with your clubs. How do you do that? How do you deal with airlines? And you have a specific airline, not to give free promotional on this show, but you have airlines that you prefer to deal with your clubs, or how do you do that? Give a little insight to the list for the listeners, because it's always that rub when you want to take your clubs with you, but oh, it could be a hassle.
Well, first of all, direct flights, if at all possible. I will never travel to Scotland or Ireland through Heathrow. I was a long time American Airlines, had a lot of mileage, a lot of status on American, but I couldn't get a direct flight to Edinburgh or Glasgow. I had to always go through Heathrow, and Heathrow is sort of like the Bermuda Triangle when it comes to golf bags. So my advice is direct flights. So, I mean, one thing that's great about Morocco, going Royal Air Maroc, direct New York to Casablanca, couldn't be easier. Boom, you're fine. Same with Glasgow or Edinburgh, you know, fly Delta. I fly Delta there, direct flights to those cities. Everything works great. Aer Lingus to Dublin, same thing. So I think the key is direct flights. And the other thing, you know, I found, which has really helped me out, and I just got this new bag recently. It's a Sun Mountain travel bag, and it's one of those that has the wheels that you pull out on the bottom of the bag so you can roll it. With the bag is kind of slanted and upright, so you can roll it that way. Absolutely the easiest way to travel with golf clubs I've ever seen, and I couldn't recommend it more, and I've just sort of discovered it now after lugging bags and dragging them all over hell and creation. This thing is just, they just glide across the floor and are so much easier. So that's the other thing. Sun Mountain, get that bag with the wheels that extend out. It's very easy to use. It's very sturdy. And it's incredibly convenient.
Yeah, I think I saw that at the PGA Merchandise Show. So would you pack your clothes in your bag, too? You can take a small suitcase? How do you travel when you're doing all this traveling?
Yeah, I mean, I take a suitcase, and I have stuff in my golf bag. As you know, as golfers, especially when you're traveling the British Isles, you're prepared for all kinds of weather. So I kind of fill my golf bag with shoes, rain gear, and things of that sort of, then put my clothes in my bag, and I prepare. I tend not to wear shorts, at least up north, in northern, way, way north of Europe, but I'll wear them, you know, down in, like I said, in Sicily or in Morocco, but, you know, then just carry my other stuff in my suitcase, and I do check bags. I always have, and knock on wood, I have pretty good luck with that. But I won't go through Heathrow. I just avoid that like the flag.
Yeah, I remember the first time I flew to Ireland, they lost my bag, and I think it was through Heathrow. So, and it was my golf bag, thank goodness. But you know, this is why you always travel with some clean underwear and such, a change of clothes in your carry-on. I'm just going to tell you right now, if you haven't been doing it, you should do it, because you may say, oh, I haven't had any problems thus far, but it only takes one time. And 3 days later, it's a good thing I wasn't going other places. I had a home base in outside of Dublin, so they were able to, the bag eventually showed up. But again, it was 3 days later. But that's another story for another time, as we're with the great storyteller, John Steinbreeder. Yes, one of our buddies, longtime buddies, and we're happy to say that, because you know, we've been doing a show for a long time, so it's great to have this kind of people in your circle. We'll be back to finish the show with the Stein after this break. We have traveled around the world, or started to anyway, through John Steinbreeder, because he's like that. You know, he's a guy that, I thought you were cutting back on your travel. I'm gonna say that right now, because while it's going to be great to go to Greece and stuff, you're like, oh, I'm cutting back, you know. I'm going to be 70 soon, and, you know.
It's not happening. I got Ireland and Scotland on the docket, and I think two trips to Morocco and Greece, and I think I'm going out to Oregon in June to check out the other Oregon, which would be around Bend, and and look at some of those courses there. So yeah, they're still racking up the frequent flyer miles. Not quite as much as I was pre-COVID, but still getting on the road okay and doing just enough travel, enough to keep it interesting. And hopefully the last 2 weeks I traveled like crazy and I did not get caught up in all these ridiculous TSA lines and had some pretty low-key trips, thank goodness. So, and I'm trying to avoid the summer as much as I can. I'm not doing very much travel in July and August because it's amateur hour and just a complete mess.
It does wear you out. Or don't do spring break if you don't have to. There are no fly lists, but there are no fly times of the year lists that Stein and I have. That is for sure. But listen, other than Greece, you've been to like all these places before. What's the deal? How do you get Nugent to keep paying for this ticket?
Well, sometimes people just invite me back because they take care of me. So it's a great combination of that, and they want their stories told, and they realize the world's different than it was 30 years ago when I was working at Time Inc. and they had pretty unlimited expense accounts and you could go all over hell and creation, and it's a little harder to do that right now. And I know what they do, and I know the Irish are incredibly good at this, and the Moroccans are really good at this. They appreciate the coverage and the support, and they want their stories told, and they're happy to help you tell them.
That's awesome because this day and age, the golf writers are dwindling. As we speak, the Washington Post closed their sports section. Now they get the great Doug from Associated Press to write those golf stories and such, but that's what's happening writer-wise. I mean, I know that you're fortunate to work for Global Golf Post, but the rest of the brethren aren't doing so hot.
No, it's tough. I mean, I was talking the other day with a friend of mine. I think really since 2008 and 2009, I really noticed when the golf industry was changing so dramatically around the time of the economic downturn. And not that they were necessarily related, but that was around the same time that the magazine world sort of blew up. And that's when I was able to talk to Herb Kohler about doing that book for Herb. And I started doing these club histories because that became a big part of my business, an important part of my business. And I've done now my 27th and 28th books are coming out this summer. And most of the ones I write these days are these histories, which are great fun to write, and there's a real market for that, and thank goodness, because, the magazine world is blown up completely, and while places like Fortune and Sports Illustrated, for which I wrote in their heydays, are still alive, they're on life support as far as that goes, and not doing very much and not doing it particularly well. So yeah, I feel very lucky in that because the industry has changed so dramatically, and getting back to being the dinosaur that I am and that we are, our day is come and gone, unfortunately, and there are not many out there anymore because there are just not that many places that operate with staff people.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, this is T.W. Keith Jones is the longest running national radio golf show. But, that being said, radio is dying as well. And it's a shame to say that. And yes, you can get this broadcast as a podcast, thanks to Ryan Ballingy and GolfNet News and doing a great job for us as well, but that's where we're at. Stein is definitely older than yours truly. However, it comes to a point where you have to, try to do what you can for whatever. Yes, I realize that we have our insulary bubble, so to speak, but we're pleased to be able to tell the stories and to have the great guests and those kind of things because people really, they do want it.
I just know I still have some places that'll publish my work and still have some people who want me to tell their stories. And so I'm going to keep doing it. It's been a joy to be able to find those niches and find different ways to tell really interesting stories.
Well, you're lucky you're going to still get to do this show as well. John Steinbreeder, my guest on T.W. Keith Jones. We're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. Practice. Take your game to the next level. And we will talk to you next week. Take care.